This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
One of the best parts of being from northeastern Arizona is that you get to go to the Grand Canyon on scouting trips. Like, for example, the four-day excursion I took when I was in the teacher's quorum. We planned this trip for months, down to the most meticulous detail. In the weeks leading up to it, we practiced skills specifically for this campout, putting up tents for a multi-day hike, water purification so we could replenish our supply in the Colorado River, and knot tying to, I'm not really sure what the knot tying was for. We just always did it. Whatever. Anyway, eventually the long-awaited day arrived, but it wasn't all roses. See, a few days earlier, forecasts of inclement weather over the North Rim started trickling in, and we were all feeling a little nervous as we stood around our respective piles of gear in the church foyer waiting to drive to the trailhead. One kid in particular, Lawrence, was looking particularly unsure of himself. Lawrence, now, he was unique. I've come to really hate the cliche of describing a person as someone who walks to the beat of their own drum, but seriously, I have never met anyone like Lawrence. He was equal parts Kramer and Newman and Joe Dirt, stout and knock-kneed and infused with the strength you can only get from raising goats, which was his hobby. I once heard him describe the pronunciation of his name as Lawrence, like rinse your dishes. He was absolutely hysterical, and we all loved him. Anyway, Lawrence wasn't looking too sure of himself, and when our scout leader came into the room, he stood up awkwardly and asked to speak to him. We all knew what was coming. He was backing out. He and the leader went back and forth a few times until an ultimatum was issued. Were you in, or were you out? He dropped his head thoughtfully and drawled back, "Well, my head says no, and my body says no, and my feet say no. So I guess the answer is no." I'm still not quite sure why he considered his feet as being separate from his body, but the point was that he would not be coming with us. So it was with this somewhat ominous backdrop of iffy weather and a casualty to our cause that we set out in my scoutmaster's hulking old rapist-style Ford van to spend the night at the trailhead. But in spite of all that, I was still really excited because my older brother, who had gotten home from his mission a few months earlier and was waiting for the semester to start at BYU, was coming along as an advisor. This trip was gonna be awesome. After a brief night's sleep, we got up and assembled our packs to head out. There was a tiny hiccup, though. See, until that moment, I was, for some reason, convinced that there would be some sort of water dispenser system at the trailhead. Looking back, it was a stupid idea. What did I seriously think they were going to have? Like a hose or a spigot or a drinking fountain or one of those beach shower thingies? Anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, I hadn't bothered to fill my water bottles before we left, so I had no water. None. Zero. Which is like literally the number one most important thing to bring on a hike. Look at any hiking trip packing list. Have clothes, have shoes, have water. It'll be in the top three every time. Anyway, I was understandably a little embarrassed about my, let's call it an oversight, so I wanted to solve my problem as discreetly as possible. I pulled my brother aside and whispered earnestly into his face, "I have no water." He didn't seem very interested in matching my hushed tone.
"You didn't have any water? Are you joking? It's the only thing you gotta have. What'd I tell you? Bring water. Make sure you fill up your water."
"Shut up, all right? I know. I just don't want everyone else to find out."
"Too late."
The other boys heard enough to piece together what was going on, and they could smell the impending public humiliation. They circled around us like sharks. And they were not disappointed. I was tongue-lashed by every adult in the group for about 5 straight minutes. Once they were convinced I felt appropriately shitty, I was given a small extra water bottle from somebody else's pack, and we headed out. Starting out, the going was slow. Really slow. Extremely slow. Like, stopping every quarter mile because this one kid's weird 60-year-old grandpa that's accompanying your group, who's an amateur bodybuilder and occasionally shows his oiled-up Speedo pictures to your widowed mom when he comes over to fix the washing machine, packed a heavy-as-shit pack he can't carry. Slow. And because of that, we didn't get nearly as far as we thought we would that day. In fact, by the end of it, our scout leader, Lowell, who was the strongest man I ever met in my life, he could bend penny nails with his fingers, no joke, had to run back and forth the last half mile of the trip like 5 times so he could carry the stragglers' packs. Eventually, we ended up on the saddle, which was this narrow plain between 2 steep drop-offs that had a streak of bright white grass going on it. I'm not really sure why we decided to camp right on the peninsula surrounded by deadly cliffs, but whatever. Eventually, we made camp and ate a dinner of cannery beef mixed with ramen noodles that was somehow even more disappointing than it sounds. It was at this point that the weather started to catch up with us, and it started to rain. And rain. And rain. By the time we woke up, everything we had was soaked. But you know, whatever, that's cool. It'll just be a little more awkward to hike down to the Colorado. Problem solved. except for the fact that the next 2 miles of the hike were a steep decline down a path paved with smooth, now impossibly slippery rocks. But, you know, whatever, that's cool. We'll just stay on the saddle an extra day. Problem solved. Except for the fact that, no thanks to me, we only carried enough water for our trip to the Colorado, where we were planning on refilling using our trusty water filter, so we'd run out before we got there if we stayed put. But, you know, whatever, that's cool. We'll just use that trusty hand pump water filter to clean out the runoff water from the rain. Problem solved. Except for the fact that the purifier just broke from all the sediment in the runoff, and the temperature was dropping. Shit. So, needless to say, we were in a bit of a bind. Eventually, someone made the executive decision that we were just going to cut our losses, hike out, and go home. The thing is, that decision was made at about 2:30 p.m. So, basically, that left us with 4 hours of daylight to ascend the same distance that it had taken us 6 hours to descend the day before. Oh, and did I mention we didn't have enough water? Yeah, we didn't have enough water. I really honestly don't know how we made it out of there alive. About a mile into it, one of the boys, who, from what I remember, weighed about 25 pounds and was using a backpack made from pieces of a neutron star, was lagging way behind. He'd given it a good effort, but it just wasn't going to make it on his own. At first, we started taking stuff out of his pack and spreading it out amongst the group, but it wasn't enough, so eventually we ended up just taking the entire pack and tying it to the top of my brother's pack. As we hiked to higher elevation, the temperature dropped further and more snowflakes started falling with the rain. And when the cold set in, the fatigue got more acute and weird stuff started happening. Like, one of the kids, it was actually the grandson of the weird bodybuilder dude, slipped on a stair step on the trail, fell back onto his pack, and immediately fell asleep. After a few minutes, he woke up completely disoriented and started walking back down the trail trying to find his grandpa. Luckily, he did. Nobody had it worse than my brother, though. Don't get me wrong, the guy's a strong dude, but you can only carry 2 waterlogged hiking packs tied to each other, only relying on rainwater sucked out of your hat brim and sleeves for so long. He was the last person in our group by a long shot, and long after everyone had stumbled out of the night into that velvet seat covers of our sweet ride, he was still out there. I couldn't get him to tell me exactly what had gone on during those last stages of the hike until the next day. The whole thing had shaken him up pretty badly. See, by the time he got to the last set of switchbacks before reaching the trailhead, it was almost completely dark and the temperature dropped to about freezing. And with only what amounted to about a cup of rainwater sucked out of his clothes and a few soggy tortillas he'd managed to pull out of God knows where for sustenance, exhaustion was catching up with him. Delirious from fatigue, he just stood motionless in front of a 12-inch stair step trying to figure out what he was going to do.
I can't go on.
What do you mean?
I can't, man. I got nothing. There's nothing left. There's nothing. Oh, man. Bummer.
Yeah, seriously.
Shoot. Well, you could, you know, go to sleep.
Huh?
You could go to sleep. You got that emergency blanket in your backpack, right?
Yeah.
So, just lay it down on the ground, take a little rest, gather your strength, bada bing, bada boom, you get the rest of the way.
I don't know. Everyone's waiting on me. It'd be kind of rude.
No way. You deserve it. You've been hiking in the freezing rain all day. If anyone deserves to take a surprise nap in the snow while soaking wet with no sleeping bag, it's you.
Sure. Yeah.
The symptoms of hypothermia include confusion, deliriousness, fatigue, dizziness, loss of rational thinking, and, if left untreated, death.
And that's how Lowell found him when he eventually got out of the van and started looking. Standing in front of a corgi-sized stair step, in the early stages of hypothermia, seriously contemplating falling asleep for what very well could have been the last time. Yeah. Holy shit. Meanwhile, back in the van, a few minutes later, the sliding door opened abruptly. My brother stood there in the doorway, eyes glazed and slack-jawed. We stared silently back, stripped to our underwear and huddled around a bag of Oreos and Twizzlers. The modified garbage bag he had used as a cover against the rain had been torn by twigs and branches along the trail until the only thing holding it on was a narrow strip that ran diagonally across his torso, like a landfill version of Tarzan. Without breaking eye contact, he slapped his hand against his chest, tore what remained of the bag off, and stepped into the van. He gestured at the candy and grunted, "Food." We handed it to him, and he shoved a fistful of Oreos into his mouth. Lowell hopped into the driver's seat, put the van in gear, and drove the entire way home in a silence that was only broken by the occasional whimper as somebody fought off a Charlie horse left over from a brush with dehydration. Now, as entertaining as that story was, I mean, I'm kind of assuming it was entertaining. Every time I've told it, it seems pretty popular, but maybe I'm way off. Maybe it was boring. I don't know. I'm still not really sure how to feel about it, though. On one hand, it was a valuable experience in a lot of ways. It taught me how I could push past what I thought my limits were in a moment of true necessity, and I definitely never forgot to bring my water on a hiking trip again. But on the other, what we experienced was incredibly dangerous. My brother almost died out there. If I knew that a child of mine was about to go on a trip that exposed them to that level of danger, I'd never let them go. No freaking way. And yet, even if I had the choice, I don't think I'd ever go back and, with Lawrence, decide that my head says no, and my body says no, and my feet say no, so I guess the answer is no. I consider that experience part of the landscape of who I am, in a way. I struggle with the same ambivalence when I think about my experience as a Mormon. On one hand, Mormonism is undeniably fucked up. But if there was a magic button I could push and undo my entire Mormon experience, my years in primary and young men's and seminary in Peru, I really don't think I would. And I'm not sure what that means. Maybe in the end it was good for me to go through that. Maybe I'm better off having experienced it. Or maybe I'm too lazy or scared to imagine anything else, so I cling to what I know. In the end, it's a moot point. You can't go back and undo what's been done. But that doesn't make reconciling the difficulties of the past with the person I am now any less complicated. Anyway, anyone for the closing prayer?
So here's a Boy Scout law, and I quote, Scout is just with loyal health, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, good to brave, clean and brown run. Means you don't tell the lies, the help old ladies you smile.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.